Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to Not Another Mummy Podcast with me, Alison Perry. My guest today is Ruth Crilly, who has been a successful model, and now she blogs at A Model Recommends. She writes, she films YouTube videos, and creates all sorts of amazing digital content, mostly beauty, a bit of fashion, a bit of lifestyle, and she's also a mum of two. She's soon launching an app called The Night Feed, which is aimed at new mums up feeding their baby. And we caught up on the podcast about all sorts of things, from juggling motherhood and work, mum guilt, comparison, making a living on social media, and the big taboo, how motherhood can be a bit boring. Here's what Ruth had to say. Welcome, Ruth, to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Very excited to have you on. So you are a successful model. What are some of the campaigns that you worked on?
Oh man, this is going back.
Back in the day.
I mean, at one point I was doing everything. So I'd go down the high street and I think I was in sort of 5 or 6 high street windows when they used to use models in campaigns.
Yeah,
and
there
not
I am,
celebrities.
There I am, there I am.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And I used to play a game where I used to go into WH Smith's or R Frank's. Do you remember that magazine shop?
R Frank's?
Yeah, it was behind Topshop, that kind of area. And it was a specialist magazine shop. And there used to be loads around London. You don't get them anymore. They used to have all of those rare magazines that weren't on general release.
I remember I used to always go to Borders for those sort of things.
Borders.
Do you remember back in the day there was a Borders?
Yeah.
And you get all the kind of random little magazines that you couldn't find anywhere else.
Yeah, so Borders. So this would have been more specialist than Borders,
right,
even still. And I used to go in and see... I used to go and find some of the obscure sort of foreign magazines that I'd been in. But yeah, I used to play a game and every month I'd be on some covers or I'd be in something. So I was busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would say that's fairly successful then. Fairly,
yeah.
You know, ish.
Yeah. it was okay.
And also you write a blog, you film YouTube videos and you create all sorts of digital fashion, beauty, lifestyle content.
Yeah.
Under A Model Recommends.
That's right, yeah.
Why do you think that's taken off in such a big way? Because it really has. It feels like you're up there. You've got a lot of people reading your blog posts and watching your videos.
Well, I started it 9 years ago and it really took off straight away. And I think at that point there weren't that many blogs. I mean, there were, but nothing like it is now. I mean, it's absolutely saturated. And so people were still sort of able to carve out their own niche. And that was my niche. You know, I was a model and people didn't really know the reality behind the scenes. And so it was just a perspective that nobody had seen before, I think. And it started off, I was going to write anecdotes about my jobs and bits and pieces. But I wrote a few beauty reviews and they did really, really well. And I really enjoyed it. And it was the beauty aspect of modelling and being in the makeup artist chair and looking at what they were using and the skincare that I was really interested in. So I rolled with that and then it immediately just really sort of gained traction.
Yeah, brilliant. And you're a mum of two.
Yeah.
What's that like?
Yeah, I still can't believe it actually, because it took 6 years to get pregnant with Angelica and she's 4 in a couple of weeks' time, which means that it'll be a good like decade since we started thinking about having kids.
Wow. So that's kind of like the same length of time as your blog has been going.
And yeah. So we started, well, we got married nearly 11 years ago. And so there were a couple of years where we weren't really trying or not trying. And then when I started my blog, I think the year after, I think I had a miscarriage. Maybe it was a year after that, but it was pretty soon after I'd started it. And I was thinking about this the other day. It's so not funny, but it's so strange that now everybody really shares everything online.
Yeah.
There was no way I would have shared that then. The climate was just completely different in social media. And it was quite lonely because I'd created this huge monster of a website and it was doing really, really well. And I was working all hours that God sent. And I really felt like I couldn't share what I was going through at all. It just wouldn't have been on the agenda. So that was a bit of a weird time.
It's funny though, isn't it? You're right, because back then, you know, we had Twitter, but that's not the kind of information that you would have shared on Twitter. Twitter was much more kind of little quips and links and jokes, so that kind
of thing.
Nobody
shared anything. I mean, the sharing thing has become massive over the last few years, because I remember the first few people. I remember Sam and Nick Chapman doing a video with their mum about domestic violence. And that was one of the first really open videos that I'd seen somebody do, where they were sharing something that was very, very private. Mm. I mean, there would have been ones before that, but I feel that now, you know, people share everything.
Yeah. And also, I guess you were a beauty blogger and vlogger, and that was what you spoke about. And nowadays, it's kind of much more normal for people to do a bit of beauty, a bit of fashion, but also talk about their lives and share things that are happening to them. But back then it kind of wasn't really like
that. You didn't really do that. And I think, I mean, I think in a way when I started, the whole model element of it created this mystique, slight mystique. But then on the other hand, I was really open and tried to be very realistic, which is why it did really well. But then you soon realise that actually, because you can see viewing figures and reactions to everything, you get a guide as to what the temperature's like on a reaction. And I soon realised that the things that did the best were when people saw what was behind you. You know, they want real life and they want what you're really thinking. And I'm quite guarded about it, actually. It doesn't look like I am, because I tell the most outrageous things about myself. But I'm very selective about what I do tell.
Yeah. So by the time your daughter came along, how did you decide how much of that experience to share with your audience?
Well, I decided that I wanted to share the whole of the pregnancy, just because it was just so amazing. I didn't start until about 22 weeks in, because I was so paranoid that something bad might happen and I didn't want to jinx myself.
And it's bad enough, I think, sometimes sharing it with like your family and friends.
Yeah.
But when you have built up an audience to share such personal news, it's a big thing.
Yeah, it was quite difficult. But I thought, well, I can't hide it, so I need to tell some things. And then I thought, well, this is actually quite interesting to write about the pregnancy. But I used to write about it sort of a week later or 2 weeks later. I never felt comfortable sharing stuff immediately.
Would you write it and then share it a few weeks later?
Yes.
So that it was fresh in your mind?
Yeah. So it was probably a week later or 10 days later. So I would write it. Yeah, exactly. And then I would stagger it. But I do that with my content now. So because I don't like people really knowing where I am in the world, whether I've got my kids with me, where, you know, I always think when people say, oh, we're going on holiday for 2 weeks, I think, oh my God, you're crazy telling people that online. Or maybe they're doing the same thing as me, which is I will actually just stagger everything by a week. So when I'm showing pictures of a time away, I'm usually back home again.
Mm. That must be, I mean, that there's a lot of brain power and organisation surely must go into that, because to be sharing content, like social media content, pretending that you are one place when you're actually somewhere else. Is that not?
No, not really. Do you know what? I've got a really overactive imagination and a morbid one. So I just think to myself, what would I not want a psycho to know about me?
Okay.
So I pretend that there's a psycho.
Yeah.
And that sounds awful, because my audience are amazing. But I always think to myself, would you want someone knowing that you're off to pick your kid up from school now?
Mm.
Would you want them knowing that you're on the school run? Would you want them knowing where your kids go to school? Would you want them knowing that your house is currently empty because you're in Paris?
Yeah.
I just think when you're sharing stuff, I think, is it something I want to share full stop? And can I share it now? Is this real time sharing appropriate?
Yeah.
Or do I stagger it?
But then everyone does it, don't they? I mean, everyone, you know, to a certain extent, they have, you know, a few hundred people on Facebook that they or Instagram that they're sharing to. And it's so common for people to be like, we're at the airport, we're going on holiday.
I know.
Our house is empty.
Yeah. Oh, loving our flat screen TV. Wish we didn't have to leave it to go on holiday for a week. OMG, I didn't lock the back door. I mean, it's just crazy.
In reality, though, I do wonder, there can't be that many burglaries that have happened because of social media. It's probably more likely people casing the house and, you know, just chancing
their arm.
Yeah,
that's true. I suppose. I just think as soon as you sort of get a bigger following, you've got to multiply everything and there are just...
I guess when you've got kids, you've got responsibility to ensure their safety, haven't you?
So I suppose going back to your original question, how did I decide how much to share? As soon as I gave birth, I felt so unbelievably protective. I thought, I don't want them seeing a picture. I don't want to share her name. And of course, everybody was like waiting because they'd gone through this pregnancy with me and read about every step of the way. And I suddenly thought, no, I'm not sharing her. No, you can all go away.
She's mine.
And it was a really funny sort of postpartum reaction.
That's a real instinct thing, isn't it?
Yeah, whereas some people are absolutely fine doing it. So it took me a good few weeks to get around. But then because I wanted to write about that, I did quite well writing about my life updates for a few months without necessarily showing a picture of her. I mean, it was always the back of her head or something like that. But eventually I was like, oh, come on. I mean, people all over the place have pictures of it. I'm not Mariah, you know.
As much as you'd like to be.
Yeah, as much as I'd love to be Mariah, I am not.
It's funny though, because I get that sometimes. Like I'm weaning my twins at the moment. So I feel like on every podcast episode, I'm like, my twins are doing this.
How old
like,
are
that
they now then?
They're 7 months old.
How has that happened?
I know, just
so
in a blink of an eye.
I remember the newborn picture.
I know. But yeah, I'm weaning them at the moment and I put up a video of one of my twins taking a sniff of some broccoli or cauliflower yesterday and then just chucking it on the floor and doing a little grin. And I had this panic last night. I was watching it back and I suddenly thought, I don't know if I want to share that moment. Like that's, you know, my baby's kind of first food moment. And I've just shared it with, you know, 28,000 people. And I had this kind of pang of like, do I want to be doing this? Like my life, I'm just doubting my life choices here, you know. But I think that that's a really common thing to be thinking about. Like how much of my life do I want to share with social media?
It's hard though, isn't it? It's hard to separate the fact that we work in social media and that ultimately that all of these things add to a platform and build up this vision of a life for other people that they then sort of buy into, for want of a better phrase. And I sometimes think, well, if my job wasn't in social media, would I share anything about my house, my kids, any of it? And then I thought the other night, well, actually I would, because you have this irresistible urge to sort of, I see it as, you know, when people are like, oh, I'm going to write a book because I want to be immortal. I want to be there forever. You know, I want to leave something behind. There is this urge to sort of document everything and have a record of my existence. And it's not actually, I don't really care what people feed back on it. It's not a validation of my existence, but you know, you want to share, don't you? You want to share photos of your babies. Like, look at my babies.
Know,
they're so bloody cute.
That's the thing, isn't it? And I'm totally with you. Like, before I did this as my job, I was always a massive oversharer on Facebook. Like, I was the one sharing. You know, when you'd go on holiday and you would post, like, 100 photos of my holiday back in the day on Facebook, rather than just, like, three you might do now. That was me. I was the one kind of like every single meal and every single like night out, you know.
Scallops again.
Yeah. Steak tonight.
Mm.
But yeah, no, it's an interesting one, isn't it? So how do you juggle everything? I feel like I really hate myself when I ask that question because it feels like a real cliched question to ask a mum. How do you juggle
your job? It's the
most
important one though, isn't it?
But it is such a juggle and it can feel like a bit of a struggle sometimes. So how do you manage things?
Well, I've changed tack recently. What I was doing was I was just shoehorning in stuff when I could. And I think that I don't think you can actually juggle it. I think it's almost that you prioritise. It's like, okay, so my kids are sat next to me. They are the priority. And as soon as somebody takes them off your hands or you get, you know, a couple of hours when they're asleep, then something else becomes a priority. But I do feel like our generation are probably the generation that will just burn out because we're doing so much. And recently I just thought, I don't have the mental capacity for this. I'm trying to be like this woman boss who's ruling the world and this incredible entrepreneur, you know, with my finger in every pie. But actually, some things have to give. You can't, I don't think you can do everything because there's just, you just never do anything that well.
That book wasn't there about 15 years ago, I Don't Know How She Does It, which was basically about, you know, trying to do it all. And I think you're right. I think that it's one of those things where you can do more of one thing at one time.
Yeah.
But then it kind of has to give a little.
I think you always just have to choose one thing. My problem comes and I'll get suddenly overwhelmed. I can wake up in the morning and think, I've got this. This is amazing. I am just, you know, on top of absolutely everything and nobody can take me down. And it only takes two or three things that maybe I've got to do that I hadn't, you know, made time for or that I've forgotten to do. And it could be paying a bill and then I get sort of a £10 fine on top of the bill that's come through and the fact that I haven't got Angelica's book bag ready for preschool. It can be two things and it just takes everything crashing down mentally.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just think, I can't do this.
Yeah, and you crumble.
Yeah, and it can be the smallest things that... Yeah. But and it's usually domestic or admin tasks because that's what seems to be my nerve jangler is that, well, you're working and okay, you're doing okay at giving your kids the attention that they hopefully need, but you're letting actual domestic life slide.
Yeah.
And so it tends to be those ones where I think you know, I can't actually do all of this. But then the next day you reset and you just pick the next one thing that you've got to get done that day. So it's very haphazard. But I think that I've, in the last couple of weeks, actually, because I've got my app coming out and it's just really stressful. It's another full-time job in itself. And I just thought, I can only do what I can do. So I just have to do it when I've got time.
That's so true. You can only do what you can do. You can't, you're not superwoman.
No.
Tell me about your app. You mentioned your app.
I know, it's like a little segue into that. I didn't mean to do that, actually. That's terrible. And yes, and by the way, my app.
Yes, I have a book out. I have a website. Yes. Is it called the Night Feed?
So the Night Feed is for new mums who are up feeding a baby through the night. I used to feel really, really resentful about it, and I just felt like I was constantly breastfeeding with Ted through the night, and then not so much through the day. And I'd be awake thinking, no one else is having to do this. This is absolute bollocks. Like, why am I? What have I done to deserve? And you know, it's amazing. And he was gorgeous. But I just thought, I'm so bloody tired. This isn't fair. And there was nothing for me to do. I felt like there was no content that was designed for me that I could easily get hold of and read through. And so so 2 years ago, I did all my trademarking stuff for the Night Feed. I thought, wouldn't it be great if there was an app that you could open and everything on there was designed specifically for women who are feeding at night so they don't feel alone. It's targeted for them. It's useful. And rather than almost resenting the fact that you've got to wake up again 2 hours after you've just gone to sleep, you think, ooh, open the Night Feed. Let's see who's online.
I love it. So what kind of thing will be on there? What kind of content?
So it's, think like the best blog content for a new mum. It's all very, very specific and relevant. So the type of stuff that I used to write for my life updates, for example, when I just had both babies, although I'll be pulling other people to do it in that have got a fresher mind on that one than me. But then more importantly, we've got expert content. So midwives, paediatricians, breastfeeding specialists, other feeding specialists, sleep nanny, people that can really give good, solid advice, but in a nice, friendly, non-threatening, non-patronising manner to women who, let's face it, are probably in the most vulnerable state that they will ever be in in their lives because you just feel so raw, don't you? And it's so new. And you can chat to each other, but it's a very, I wouldn't say safe space, but a friendly space. So there's a code of conduct, which is very much, if you can't say something nice, move on. And, you know, we don't want anything that's going to feel attacking or patronising to women, because they're in that space that you just want help. You just want friendly chat. So there's a code of conduct and people can report each other for moderation.
That's really interesting, because obviously, you know, one of the places that new mums might go to currently for a chat is Mumsnet.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, been a fair bit of criticism aimed at Mumsnet for it not always being the safe, not safe, but the most nurturing, helpful environment.
I suppose it's gained a bit of a reputation, but it's so huge though, isn't it?
Mm.
And I think that's really, really hard to patrol. And I think it's almost become its selling point is that it's quite biting and to the point.
Yeah, if you want like an honest, no holds barred opinion about something, that's where you go.
Absolutely.
You wouldn't go for a nice fluffy, hand-holdy experience.
No, exactly. And although I don't want the night feed to be fluffy, exactly, you know, it's for thinking, intelligent women. I just thought that, you know what? What's always put me off using forums like that, I mean, I've always looked up for stuff and one of the threads will come up on Google, but I've been too scared to join in. Well, not too scared, but it's just, it hasn't felt like something that's I've wanted to step into the world of.
Yeah.
I thought if I put this code of conduct in place from the very start, then hopefully that sets a tone. And if other people get used to sort of almost self-moderating, so you're moderating other people.
Yeah.
If something's really unfriendly. I mean, it sounds a bit vanilla and weedy in one way, but in the other way, I do think the vulnerability of a new mum needs to be
taken
into account.
I mean, I'm 7 months since having babies, and I only now feel a bit like more like my usual self, where I could probably take a bit of criticism and take a bit of, you know, straight talking. Whereas a few months ago, oh my goodness, I needed, you know, you said that the app's not fluffy, but I kind of needed a bit of fluffiness. I needed that kind
of. You want kind words, don't you?
Yeah. And you want, even if someone is saying to you, oh, actually, what you're doing there isn't necessarily the right thing to be doing, or have you tried thinking about this, doing it in a supportive way rather than being judgmental or too kind of harsh with their words. I think you're definitely vulnerable for a good few months after having a baby.
I mean, I still feel vulnerable years down the line. I should point out, actually, that it's not really a forum. It's a discuss tab. So there are different tools on the app. And it's more like, I tell you what I got the inspiration from. When I used to write my separate baby blog, The Uphill, which is now just part of my main website, people's comments underneath my blog post used to be so hilarious, really long, really well thought out. And it was because mums were up in the night, and so they had loads of time to formulate a 15-minute response. And so that's what I wanted the discuss tab to be. So more than it being a forum where someone could say, anyone got any recommendations for cafes in Milton Keynes? It's more, there's a conversation starter, there's a topic, and that might be one of the posts that's gone up, or a Q&A with an expert. And people are talking about that. So it's a guided discussion, I suppose, rather than a forum. So it'd be quite curated.
Yeah.
It's
sounds
not
amazing.
A free-for-all. Thank you.
And I imagine that by the time this podcast goes out, it will be available. So people can,
you never know,
search
for it. How long we got? Just keeps going week after week after week. It's quite a complicated old build, I think. So
if it is out, I'll put a link to it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Notes,
so yeah, it'll be a few weeks yet, I think. Wow. 2 or 3 weeks, yeah.
I think we'll be good.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So yeah, you've been working on all of that. So another thing for you to be juggling.
I know, it's great.
do you have any brilliant time management skills that you, I mean, you talk about just focusing on the thing that's in front of you, but do you have any kind of things that you absolutely always do or never do?
Yep. So turning off the, well, I suppose this depends if people have got an iPhone or they use Mac, but turn off the notifications. So on your mail or your text or whatever, when it has that little red number that flashes up, just turn those off.
That's a bit stressful,
changer.
Isn't it? When you see it going up and up and up.
Exactly. And so if you're trying to get work done, all you see is new emails popping up, and then you check them, and then you think, oh, I'll just look at towels on Zara. And then before you know it, 2 hours and you've done nothing.
Yeah.
So I turn those off, and then I just check. I get my work done, and then I have an allotted time for checking.
Do you ever use one of those kind of social media blockers?
No.
I've never used them either, but I've always been intrigued. Where you just can't get on Facebook or Twitter or anything like that.
Well, I only ever check social media on my phone, though, because it's mostly Instagram. So I just put my phone off to the side, and it's always on silent anyway, much to the annoyance of most of my friends and family. but I put that to the side. The other thing I would say, this is probably a bit controversial, but in defence of this. So a lot of people use a nursery and put their kids in, but you don't really get that long at a lot of nurseries, or well, you don't at Angelica's preschool. And I worked out that for putting them both into preschool was about sort of 100-ish more a day. I don't know what it is for nurseries where you have to pay for longer hours, and it's actually works out cheaper almost to have a nanny.
I think when you have more than one child, I've heard quite a few people saying that nannies and childminders.
I was feel a bit cringy saying it, because it sounds like something that's really Mary Poppins, you know, somebody that lives in Holland Park with a 9-bedroomed Italianate mansion. the nanny's got them, but I've had a nanny for 2 days a week ever since Angelica was one, and it's just totally life-changing, because she comes at 8, she leaves at 6, and in that time I don't have to get in the car, because, yeah, you've still got to drop them at nursery. You're still thinking about that time when you've got to pick them up. And I think knowing you've got a set amount of unadulterated time. You see, I can't work for 10 hours straight anymore. I used to be able to, but my concentration levels just aren't there. So it builds in a bit of time for me just to stare at the wall and rock backwards and forwards and then maybe pop off for some lunch. You know, it builds in some time that I can just be an adult.
I think that's okay, though, and I think that we shouldn't feel guilty for needing a bit of that time. Like, life shouldn't be, when you're a mum, life shouldn't be about you're either with your child or you're earning a crust.
Mm.
And any other time, well, you're just being a bit selfish, aren't you?
If you want
to go off and have a coffee and stare at a wall.
It's crazy, isn't it? So I'd say if you're a freelancer, you're trying to start a business, or you work from home, even if you don't work from home, any of those scenarios, I think that take a look at having a nanny, because most people discount it. And even people that I've met through doing this, they've been like, oh, no, I'd never get a nanny. But even if it's slightly more, it won't be for two kids, but if you've got one child and it looks slightly more expensive, I can guarantee that the extra productivity that you get from that day more than pays for, the extra couple of hours for having a nanny.
Yeah.
I think it's been amazing.
Brilliant. Now, we had a brief chat the other day, and we were talking about how, and I reckon lots of people probably think this but don't admit to it, we were talking about how sometimes being a parent can be a bit boring.
I've forgotten we said that. Sorry, I said that. I won't bundle you into my sins.
It
is, isn't it, sometimes?
I think we're all different, and we all find different stuff fun and interesting.
Mm.
But, I mean, for me, things like going to the park for an hour and pushing a child on a swing for an hour, like, that's
going
just
to the park, full stop. When does it get good going to the park? Because you get to the park, they don't want to do any of the exciting things. All they want to do is stuff where you've got to stoop and peer underneath things.
It's like soft play, isn't it?
Yeah.
When your children are too little to go on soft play by themselves, and you've got to be there stooping and squeezing and sliding and...
I mean, soft play now is genius, because they just tear around and there's only one way in, one way out. And I just sit there looking at stuff on my phone, looking like a really bad parent.
Drinking a cup of tea.
Yeah. But the park is boring. But, you know, sometimes you beat yourself up about, oh, I'm not giving them enough attention and maybe I shouldn't be, you know, maybe I should have just not worked and just been a completely, like, devoted mother and not had a nanny. And then I'll do a day when neither of, you know, when there's no childcare and she's not at preschool and I'm on my own. And I think this is so, it's so hard.
It's really hard.
And so boring at points because it's just, everything is geared towards doing something for them. It's just relentless.
And also I think there's a lot of repetition involved. So, like, obviously young kids, you know, in particular, like repetition. Mm-hmm. And so I remember my daughter, my eldest, making about 72 cups of imaginary tea for me.
Yeah.
And me, you know, drinking and playing shops. And, you know, she'd be the shopkeeper and I would have to, like, physically walk up to the shop and buy something else. And I feel terrible for admitting it. But after the, you know, 15th time of buying some pretend tomatoes, it's a little bit boring.
Oh, you could go out of your mind. And then you're thinking to yourself, I should be appreciating this and this is only going to happen once. Doesn't make any difference whatsoever.
Well, this is it, because obviously you've already mentioned that it took you a while to have Angelica, and I struggled to have our twins. Like, that took us, you know, 5 years. And so in that respect, you think, you know, I feel guilty for feeling bored, that actually that whole kind of, like, cherish every moment kind of mantra that people chuck at you, and you think, I'm not cherishing this moment, you know, I should be cherishing the 72nd.
It's so funny though, it's just something you say, isn't it? Because I've said it to people with newborn babies, they're like, this is really hard. I'm like, cherish it because it's amazing. And then you think back and you think, actually at the time it is amazing, but I don't think that we're programmed to be able to amaze ourselves in it for 24 hours a day.
Yeah,
because we're just not designed like that, are we? Our brains can't just keep on staring at something and saying, oh, this is great. You know, you've got other things to do. And even sometimes I try and do this thing where I'm like, right, I can get by and I can do this. I'm going to be totally focused on them. Because when it all starts to fall apart, it's when you try and do something for yourself or think for yourself or answer an email or just have 5 minutes.
Or even just, like, do something domestic, like hanging up some washing.
And that's when you become resentful because you're like, look, just give me 5 minutes, you know. So sometimes I test myself. I'm like, right, today I'm going to be that one that's like, oh, come on, let's pretend to bake jam tarts and, you know.
Let's make a den.
But 10 minutes in and, like, they hit each other and you just say, oh, get me out, you know, isn't that? And you have, it's true, it's like you have these peaks that are just absolutely amazing and you think, I'm so, so lucky. And I do think that multiple times a day. Mm. But I think it's a very rare person who is sitting there all day long just counting, you know, patting themselves on the back, because it is life just to, maybe it's a British thing as well.
Maybe. And I do think there will be people listening who aren't relating to this at all and who
think
love,
I'm a total bitch.
And me. But, you know, they'll be listening and thinking, I just don't get it, because, like, why would you have kids if you find it boring? But I think that a lot of people, you know, love, I mean, you know, I love being a mum. I'm guessing you do too.
Yeah.
And like you say, there are
it's
moments.
The best thing ever.
There are moments in the day where you're just like, oh, you know, like your heart swells with joy and love. But then equally, there are moments where you're just like, this is really boring.
And it's hard. You know, it's hard.
It's really hard. It's such hard work.
And I don't think I've ever met anyone in real life who said, well, I didn't find it hard. I didn't find it boring.
Mm.
Nobody admits to it, because it's not one of those things that people think it's okay to admit to.
It's funny though, isn't it? Because even as we're having this conversation, I'm just having that slight kind of panic in my head of like, oh my God, people are going to think that I'm such an ungrateful, bad person.
I don't think so. I think somebody that would say that, you get, this is the problem with trolls online though, is that they will take something honest and that's what they use. They can't wait for something like that, because that's where they, you know, get their claws in and they can use it to make you feel bad. But I don't feel bad for saying that it can be boring.
How do you deal with that whole criticism, getting criticism online? Do you ignore it? Do you respond
to it? It's so hard to ignore it, isn't it? I am a sucker for answering people back, and I know that I shouldn't, because it, you know, the rules are there. It's don't engage. They want you to engage. They don't care what you say back. They just want to know they've got a reaction.
Do you think that it diffuses the situation slightly to
Do you know what some back? The thing is that for me, sometimes it has done. And I've even managed to get people around to my way of thinking, because I've said, well, let's talk respectfully about it and see where we end up, sort of vibe. And it's really worked. And they've ended up saying, oh, thank you, I hadn't thought of it like that. Or I've said, thank you, I hadn't thought of it like that. But the majority, I think you can just tell when it's a troll, can't you? I think you just have to ignore, because they're just anonymous. And you can't engage, because they don't want to be engaged with. They just want the reaction. And they like it even more when other people come to, you know, your defence, and then they can argue with them. Oh, it's just boring, and it's such a bad waste of time and energy. Don't you think?
No, I do agree. And I think that sometimes if you focus, like I've heard someone saying recently that it's really easy to focus on like the one negative thing that somebody says about you in a day, when actually maybe five other people have said kind, nice things to you, yeah, giving you positive feedback. But you choose to focus on that one negative piece of feedback. And that's quite an interesting way that our brains work.
Mm.
And I think it's quite good to try and retrain our brains a little bit and not be so hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
And to think, well, actually, you can't please all the people all the time. And as long as you are kind of doing the best you can and, you know, being honest, then
yeah,
that's the best you can do, I
this
think.
This is the problem with the whole honesty thing, though, online, isn't it? That, you know, you want to be honest, and the majority of people, 99.9% of people, are just so grateful that you've been honest, because there will be people thinking, oh God, I'm so bored with my toddlers. I'm so glad that someone else is bored and that I don't have to feel guilty for feeling bored. I mean, if you were bored like 24 hours a day, that would probably be a problem.
Yeah.
Or if you just hated it, being, you know, but do you know what? Some people hate being a mum.
Yeah.
And I've met people in real life who've said to me, do you know what? I'd never say it to many people, but I hated being a mum. I hated being a mum to young kids.
I had a guest on the podcast a while ago who we spoke about that. She's got like four kids and two stepkids, but she just does not enjoy being a mum.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It must be quite, I think it's probably quite common, because you've got your nurturing instinct. I mean, some people don't. But it's fighting with everything else that you... you know, now we have jobs and we have our own lives, whereas maybe in our parents' generation or generation before, you would have just been expecting to raise your kids. And so we have different expectation levels now.
We've got ideas above our station. That's what it is, Ruth.
But, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I absolutely love it. And it's just the most rewarding thing ever. And if I had to swap my work for my... You know, if I just had to choose one, and obviously,
yeah.
Oh God, that'd be terrible.
Actually,
myself,
I'm going to choose my work.
So obviously, yeah. But you know, if I had to key back work because I felt like I wasn't giving them enough, then I would absolutely 100% do that. But yeah, I mean, I think you have to have both to stay sane, or I have to have both to stay sane.
Me too, I do. And I genuinely don't feel bad for saying that. I think it's okay to...
I think I'm a better mum for having distractions.
Yeah.
Because I'm more focused when I have to play the prince to Cinderella for the 80th time in a week.
I bet you'd be a really good prince.
Oh, I'm so rubbish. I have to go round, I have to fit the shoe to like 50 imaginary people around the room, and then I have to act really surprised when it fits on her foot.
Oh.
I've even got like my foot cupping motion, so I slip the shoe on.
Nice.
And I sort of like, I do this pressure along her foot so it feels like a shoe. My dedication to creating a real, you know, there's a lot of realism in our role play.
I can't believe this bores you though. This sounds great. I want to get involved.
Well, no, but this is the kind of thing I do so that I don't die of boredom of doing the same role play over and over again. Now and again, I get to be the fairy godmother, which is quite good. So I turn different items into, you know, like we go past the pumpkin in the coach. We've got a lot of different elements going on to our ball. But I find myself, do you ever, I suppose you're still too young, the twins, but I find myself sometimes like verging into the inappropriate, and I think, oh, I can't say that, that's far too grown up, and she'll go to you know, I find myself amusing myself and then forgetting that actually she's of the age where she'd repeat stuff.
Yeah.
Or she'll ask me a question about it. I'll be like, why did I go down there?
That's the tricky thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I find myself sometimes making little jokes or like laughing, like my husband will say something like a double entendre and I'll laugh and my 8-year-old will be like, why was that funny?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh no, nothing. Oh, I was remembering a joke that I heard yesterday.
I said something. Do you remember in Beavis and Butthead, did they used to say bumholio?
Yeah.
And I said it for something else. I was just like muttering to making myself laugh, and then Angelica said, mummy, I have a pain in my bumholio. And I just thought, they just are sponges. They soak up everything.
Oh,
imagine going to nursery and saying that.
Yes, no. You'd be getting a note at home, wouldn't you? But mum guilt can be a big thing. Like we've mentioned guilt. And quite often you can just feel like you're just not doing a great job. And it can be really easy to be, especially if you're like, you know, scrolling on Facebook or Instagram and you see other mums doing amazing big craft projects or, you know, building cute little cozy dens and snuggling up with their little ones. And, you feel a bit like, oh, they're nailing it. They're totally being
an amazing
mum. Do you
think, though? Right. Oh, God. I can't be even going to say this. So a lot of people that I meet, not in the mummy sphere, but a lot of other people that I meet who are online influencers.
Influencers.
Are nothing like they are on it. I mean, they look nothing like they look online. They act nothing like they are online. They are not the same person, right? It's complete fabrication.
You're lifting the lid here, Ruth.
Oh, God, I know. What am I doing? I'll be like, delete that whole section. And then I wonder how many of the mummy bloggers in inverted commas are actually doing crafts all day and making dens all day. Is it a sort of 1 hour a day and then they document it because it's useful for their audience and they want to pass on an idea, for example, or I don't know. I mean, they could just be like us, but they're doing a quick hour of play and taking some photos, and in our heads we're like, oh, they're so good. They're interacting all day long.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some element, not even just with mummy bloggers, influencers, but I think just in life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know that, for example, if my daughter is painting and it's looking really cute and she's sticking fluffy things and sparkly things, I will quite often take a picture of that for Instagram, even if that only happens once a month.
Mm.
I feel like...
But you know what? That might stick in people's heads.
I know.
They might be thinking, oh my God, she's so good. Look what she's doing. I've never done pom-poms and sparkly things.
I know. But I feel like because in my head, that's what a good mum does.
Mm.
I feel like, I'll share this online because then it'll make me look like I'm, you know, doing a decent job as a mum. And it'll balance out me having crisps and wine for tea tonight because I'm too knackered to actually cook any dinner for myself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but you're right, because it's probably not. But then that is happening. Like, she is, it's not like I'm like, darling, get the paints out because I need to take a picture for social media.
But that's what I mean. Maybe it's our perception of what other people put up.
Yeah.
But also, going back to what I was saying about sort of other influencers or people on social media and other spheres, you know, they're not wearing an amazing dress and saying, this is how I look 24/7. They're just showing a high point.
Yeah.
But my perception is, oh, why do I always look like bag lady? You know, I'm always in like egg stained tracksuit bottoms. I just want to look glamorous. You know, that would be nice. They always look so glamorous. But they could have taken all their pictures in one day in Rome, you know, and they're spreading them out. And that is what people do. So in the same way, we're looking at mums, maybe they've done like a session of crafts and they're putting those up over the course of a week.
Yeah.
And the rest of the time they are exactly frazzled like us, thinking, oh God, how are we supposed to fit everything in?
I think it's really important to remember that when you're looking at any social media, you're not seeing the reality, that it is just a showreel. I mean, a showreel makes it sound really fake, but it's the highlights, isn't it? It's the things that person has chosen to share with you. But I think in the kind of, you know, motherhood kind of area, it's so good that there are so many mums out there who are showing the reality.
Mm-hmm.
So showing their egg-stained tracksuits and the fact they're having wine and crisps for tea. And, you know, yes, they might be having a bit of a painting session with their kid, but actually maybe they then show the mess that's been, you know, left afterwards with paint and glitter everywhere.
Mm.
And so I think, you know, I think it's good. I think we have got a good balance of, you know, of content being put out there.
Yeah. I tell you who I think makes it look really idyllic, though, is Susie Verrill.
How do you think?
Not idyllic.
I think she keeps it real.
No, she totally keeps it real, but all of her photos and everything, I think, oh, it just looks like such a good adventure.
Yeah.
You know, like it's all so stylish. And then they go to Arizona and everything looks amazing and it's all hot and they're in their shorts and they're doing cute things and she's going to the zoo.
So basically we just need to be engaged to an Olympic athlete who can take us to Arizona once a year for training.
But actually, when we were talking about crafts and stuff like that, I was going to mention Susie because I never feel... Because she goes on stories and she's like, oh my God, it's just taking me 3 hours to get ready. I never feel like she's putting something out there that's unattainable.
Yeah.
But I think that she must genuinely do activities with them every day but I think she makes a bit of a feature of that because she follows quite a lot of people who do that one a day activity and activity ideas. Mm. And then she passes them on, which I think is really good. And it never made that sort of gives me ideas of things to do. I never feel like, oh, this is making me feel like a shit mum.
I think that's the thing, isn't it?
She's like my mum idol.
It's getting inspiration rather than comparing yourself and feeling inadequate. It's using it as a source of inspiration and thinking, actually, I'm going to do that tomorrow rather than be like, oh, literally we've just sat here watching Peppa Pig for hours on end and I'm such a terrible mum. It's, you know.
But then she goes on stories and you can hear Peppa Pig in the background and, you know, she's like, they've been watching it for hours. So that makes me... Maybe I have a hashtag, Be More Susie.
Yes. If you're listening, Susie, we've both got a bit of a mum crush on you.
Yeah, it looks that way, doesn't it? She's locking her doors tonight.
Oh, I do like Susie. I used to work with her. So we both worked on Look magazine together.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yep, I'm a Susie fan. Right, can we end on something very important, which so as a mum, you obviously are a bit time poor, I'm guessing, when it comes to getting ready, just like you were saying about, you know, Susie taking 3 hours to get ready because it takes that long sometimes. What are your top three products for getting ready and looking good quickly?
Quickly. Okay. So I'm really bad at getting my hair. I'm going to segue into another little self-promotion here, by the way. It'll be really quick. I'm really bad at doing my hair. So as you can see, it's always in a top knot. But I have a dry shampoo brand called Colab, which is invisible dry shampoo. So I just spray shit loads of that in my hair and massage it through. And then I don't need to wash it. And if I always make sure that my roots are done, it looks better. But that's debatable as to whether I stay on top of those. So that, and then I think some kind of really multitasking tinted moisturiser, like Bare Minerals do the Complexion Rescue one, which is just really sheer, you can't really go wrong with it. And then my go-to used to be under eye concealer, because I've realised that if I don't have mascara, it looks worse than if I don't have concealer.
Ah.
So, I mean, ideally, I'll have both. But I can't go. It's so annoying because mascara is the most time consuming and problematic stage in a beauty routine. Yet it's one that I can't not do now.
Yeah.
I just look weird when I don't have lashes.
Yeah, I think that for me, if I've literally got 30 seconds before I ring at the door, it's mascara.
Oh, right. 30 seconds. God, that's hard, isn't it? 30 seconds is hard.
I would literally just whack some mascara on and then...
But you can't whack mascara on, can you? Or can you?
Oh, I can. I mean,
really?
I mean, have a look.
Is it not all this, go over this, your eyelid?
This is what happens when you whack mascara on.
Close your eyes. Let's have a look. No, it looks good. See, if I whacked it on, it would not... I mean, it just goes everywhere. That's a decent decent job.
Yes.
Some people do a bright lipstick, don't they?
Yeah.
But I find if I had just a bright lipstick on, it would look horrendous.
It would make my skin look really blotchy, I think.
Yeah, I have to have the full... If I'm going to do a colourful lip, then I have to have the full Monty of makeup on.
Yeah, I'm with you. And who's got time for that?
Let's... No.
On a normal day. Ruth, thank you for being my guest.
Thanks for having me.
It's been great.
It has been good fun, hasn't it?
It has. Thank you.
Thanks.
I love how straight talking and honest Ruth was. Big thank you to her for being my guest and thank you to you for listening. Please rate, review and subscribe to the podcast because it really helps and I'll catch up with you next time.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.